All right, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Thanks for joining me on RealLibertyMedia.com Live. If you'd like to make a donation, come to RealLibertyMedia.com. Hit the donate button, leave a little something, keep us going on the air here. I appreciate all the support. So this week was kind of a crazy week for me. I had a couple continuing dental education courses I had to go to. One was kind of elective, but I have to get 20 hours of CME in a two-year period. Scratch that. 40 hours of CME in a two-year period. So, and a couple courses are required, and one of the required courses I took was on medical emergencies. I'll talk about that in a minute. But the first course I took on Friday. It was a two-hour course, and it was virtual, so I could sit here at home and do it. And that was on ectodermal dysplasia. And the only reason I kind of want to talk about ectodermal dysplasia is because it's one of the few, and I mean extremely rare, genetic conditions which actually cause malformation of tooth structure or complete lack of tooth structure, missing teeth, small teeth, malformed teeth. And this is what I say when people tell me that, you know, their dental condition is genetic, and, you know, I have to disagree with them because it's an extremely rare disease that causes lost or missing teeth. Most people kind of misconstrue what they inherited from their parents was actually the bacteria that caused periodontal disease or decay. And they always say it's genetic, and it's not. It's actually a transmission from your parents sharing silverware with you, sharing food with you, especially as a baby. As you get your teeth, if your parents have really horrible bacteria that cause decay and periodontal disease, well, guess what? You're going to get that bacteria because you share the same utensils. Ectodermal dysplasia, on the other hand, is a genetic disorder that really can screw some people up. So anyway, I have to see. So one of the things that I was really impressed with this presentation on ectodermal dysplasia is that the people who are now have this foundation, they support this foundation called the National Foundation for Ectodermal Dysplasia. And if you're interested, just go have a look, you know, look that up yourself, see what that looks like, see what the people who have that genetic disorder have to go through. The main thing is, as children, they don't have like normal smiles. They don't have normal teeth. There's some other things that affect them skeletally. But, you know, my thing being a dentist is the disorder that affects dental tissues. But what I was really amazed with is, you know, as general practitioners, we don't ever, like, we would never imagine putting a denture in a child, like a 4-year-old, 5-year-old child. But as it turns out, the people who are involved with ectodermal dysplasia, they're doing just that. They're making dentures for children, which, you know, we always think of that as a potential choking hazard, and it is. But what they have found is these kids are either so desperate or so willing to have like a natural smile or natural looking face that they tolerate wearing these dentures extremely well, and in some cases too well, because they won't take the dentures out when they sleep, which I think is truly a choking hazard. But, you know, you kind of can't blame the kids for wanting to seem somewhat normal, because their teeth are truly really messed up and their faces don't look correct because they don't have the support of their lips and their cheeks to look normal. So these guys are really doing an awesome job. It's really surprising to me to see the advances that have occurred in the last 40 years in dentistry to help these kids. And as they grow into adulthood, the things that they are doing to provide these people with more normal looking faces and teeth and smiles, it's really amazing. So that was a really good course. Like I said, that was a virtual course. It was a 2-hour course I took on Friday. And then I had to go actually participate in this course called Medical Emergencies in the Dental Setting, Dental Office, whatever you want to call it. It was a great course. That one is required every 2 years of your licensing. So that second course that I went to was a medical emergencies course in the dental environment. And what I wanted to say about that is if you have been a dentist for any length of time, you're going to have a dental emergency in your office by either one of your staff or one of your patients. Something is going to happen. It's inevitable. In 40 years, I've had a few. Most recently, I came in. This is kind of strange. So some of my patients have caregivers. Sometimes those caregivers, I don't think they pay really close attention to people. Like, I think some caregivers are, you know, I don't know, like kind of support, or it almost becomes like a, what do I want to say? Like a domestic relationship, really. And I think sometimes people start kind of making assumptions about the person that they're caring for. So this guy was brought into the clinic by his caregiver, and he was placed in the dental chair. I think she helped him get in the dental chair. And then she split, which is kind of against our policy. If you're a caregiver, you have to remain while the patient's being treated, so that when I'm done, we can, you know, get that patient out of the chair and move on to our next patient. Well, that caregiver left, and I just walked by the room that this guy was in, and I could tell that something was definitely not right. So I went to my front desk, and I said, hey, I said, you know, how did... What's the deal with this guy in this room? You know, like, did somebody drop him off? Is caregiver here? And they go, oh, no, she left. So I go back to the room, and I just stepped in the room, and I stepped in front of the patient, and I said, hey, I said, how do you feel today? And he looked horrible. And he said, I feel terrible. And I said, yeah, I kind of got that feeling that you didn't feel good. And, I said, well, when did you start not feeling so good? And he said, on the way over here, which, you know, some people, they're on the way to the dentist, you know, it kind of sucks. They're not going to feel good. And so I said, well, you know, what is it that, what doesn't feel good? And he said, I'm having a hard time breathing. And I go, okay, that's it. I had the office call 911, we got emergency services there, and he went off to the hospital, and he died the next day. He had had a stroke, and he had had that stroke on the way to the appointment. So the caregiver in this case, I'm not really blaming her or anything, I'm just saying, like, she didn't really pay attention to his complaints that he suddenly didn't feel good. And, you know, I think she just wanted him to be seen and get his care done or whatever. And in that way, she was kind of being responsible. But in another way, she was ignoring the fact that he didn't feel well. And a lot of times, you can just tell somebody doesn't feel right. Like, you can tell by looking at them, by having some exchange with them. I think I've probably avoided a number of dental emergencies, like passing out and shortness of breath and, you know, whatever, by just talking to people before I get going. And sometimes I will literally say to my patients, hey, we don't have to do this today. You know, if you're not up for it, let's not press it. Because number one, I don't like working under stress. And if I feel like my patient is under that much stress, especially if it means that I have to be like extremely careful about what I'm doing, yeah, I'm probably going to reschedule the appointment. Because I know it sounds horrible, but I don't have time to wait for my patients to become totally comfortable before I get going and get stuff done. Like I've said many times, especially in the past few months, there's such a shortage of dentists and dental staff, and we're so far behind at providing care that, yeah, we kind of got to move along, you know. And if you're not ready to be seen, well, one thing, I can give you some oral sedatives that you can take before you come in next time, make you a little more relaxed, and, you know, that'll help and help me also be able to perform the task that I have to perform comfortably. Because if I'm stressed, you could imagine, I'm probably not going to do my best work. Like if it's a filling, if it's some kind of an aesthetic filling in the front, you know, and I'm working under stress, abnormal stress, it's probably not going to look the best because, you know, I'm not relaxed, able to provide the best care that I can provide. And I think pretty much, I would say 80% of dentists out there will tell you the same thing. I'll do a clinically acceptable job, but it won't be my best work. And I always like doing my best work. I mean, who doesn't? And yeah, sometimes it's impossible to do it, but I always like to anyway. I mean, yeah, it's a long story. I'll go into it later. Sip time. Okay. So I wanted to tell you about one of the presenters yesterday because I thought it was kind of interesting. I think next week will be the 1 year anniversary that I've been on Real Liberty Media. So I'm going to take we're going to have a little bit of a collage next week. I'm going to take some snippets of audio from day one, and we'll just take a few pieces and let them play. And you can see, I think, the difference over time, how this podcast has changed. And hopefully there's a significant difference. I haven't even gone back to look at them myself yet, but I just have a feeling there's going to be a big difference. Anyway, yesterday, one of the presenters, it was two oral surgeons doing the presentation on medical emergencies. And one of them was not tethered, and you'll understand what I mean in a minute. One was untethered, and one felt compelled to stand near his laptop because this was a live continuing education course. In other words, I went somewhere live and sat and enjoyed the presentation and some of my peers. But there were also people who had joined virtually on the computer. And this presenter felt like he couldn't walk too far away from the laptop because that's where the mic was. And I thought, that's really interesting. So one of the things that I've learned that I don't employ, but I could, is mic called a lavalier mic. I think it's some kind of a French word, actually. Or some people call it a lapel mic. You see them on people who are like doing the news a lot. They'll have a lapel mic on. And so when the presentation was over and we were kind of just milling around, I went up and told him, you know, hey, you know, what you need a Bluetooth lapel mic, I told him, because maybe the other word wouldn't resonate with him. And I said, because, you know, no matter where you walk around in this room, the sound is going to get Bluetooth right back to your laptop, and everybody who's listening on the laptop will hear you perfectly as if you're standing right there. And they weren't, they had video feed, but not a camera on him. They were getting video feed of the slides that he was putting on display for us. And of course, people who were watching virtually were watching the slides on their computer. So it would have worked out perfectly for him. I felt kind of bad because you'd see this guy, he'd take like two steps away from the podium like he would normally do if he could get away from the computer. And then he would realize, oh, I can't step out here. Or I can't walk over here, you know, and I have to stay kind of tethered to this laptop. So I thought it was kind of interesting that even some simple things, some people are kind of unaware of, you know, in like in audio presentation. And the crazy thing is, there's so many podcasts out there, which I think is really cool. For one reason, I mean, look at what we've seen with the trucker convoy in Canada. There's so many live podcasters. Well, in my opinion, there's not enough, but there's a bunch. You know, and if you look at mainstream media's coverage of the convoy, it's so pitiful that, and it tells such a different story than what you actually see if you just drop in on a live podcast and see for yourself what's going on. So I'm really happy that there's so many more people who are taking to podcasting and podcasting stuff that they're really interested in, and especially if they're, if they're really good at it. Whatever it is, like one member of our family, well, not my direct family, kind of in-law related, is really into making jewelry out of silver coins and faceting stones and stuff like that. And our daughter is actually getting into faceting stones. And he's apparently so good at it. That's how he makes his living. He does a stream of what he does, and he sells his jewelry online. And, you know, I just love seeing people who are really good at what they're doing. And then go and watch them, man. It truly is an art form to watch somebody. I don't care what it is. Even if it's somebody who's good at repairing cars or building models or gardening or talking about edible wild foods or mushroom. I mean, it literally doesn't matter what it is. It's like an art form watching them do their thing because they're so good at it. But in this day and age, it's like some people aren't familiar with some of the simplest tools that can make them, make their job so much easier. So I thought that was cool that I was able to help that guy out. I'm sure he's going to go be picking up one of these mics because he does presentations like this a few times a year for different groups, around the state and different schools and stuff like that. So, I think that was helpful. Along that same lines, now this guy isn't a real young guy, but he's not an older guy either. I'd say he's 30-something, let's say. And I was reading a story on Slashdot, which is kind of a computer junkies page, I think, Slashdot. And they were talking about how the current generations of students don't have any idea, they don't understand computer filing systems and storage. So this professor had talked to, asked these students, there wasn't one, it was multiple professors in their courses had to have students do their work, like create their work and then save it as a file in a folder on on a storage unit of some kind. And these students had no idea what that meant because everything that kids today, young people, well, let's say for the past 20 years at least, they only know that stuff is just stored. It's just magically stored somewhere. And they're not really 100% sure where that somewhere is, but it's stored somewhere. So I thought that was interesting because we think, you know, and even when this whole pandemic thing started, I was talking about, you know, the kids complaining about doing homeschooling because I was thinking because they were complaining about, you know, screen time and stuff. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You spend all this time on your freaking computer anyway, or your phone or your tablet or whatever. And now because you have to do it for school, you're complaining. But the kind of the point is, man, they've been like spoon fed so much and everything kind of taken care of for them, which is actually kind of scary, that they don't even know how these file systems work, or that something is actually stored as a digital file on a physical device somewhere. Maybe I shouldn't have said physical file, because it's really not physical, is it? It's all digital. But it's actually stored on a device somewhere. But kids have grown up with cloud storage, so all of their phone numbers are stored in Google or stored at Apple or stored wherever, Samsung or, you know, whatever Android devices, whatever device you have or whatever apps you use, it seems like they're all offering you some kind of storage. And so now they're having to teach these kids how to actually save their work, you know, on a hard drive and go retrieve it and kind of make that a reality for them instead of just, you know, oh, it's on my phone. So I thought that was kind of interesting also. Oh, I'm reading chat. I don't know what's going on with chat. I guess I'll have to read it later. Okay, sorry, distracted. Okay, so what I wanted to kind of talk about a little bit about today, I'm going to talk a little bit about some wild edible foods that you can gather in North America. But first, I kind of wanted to finish up what I was talking about the other day about our lettuce, like our vegetable pods that we're starting already, because I don't think I really got to cover it much last week when I wanted to, so I just wanted to kind of catch up on that. So we started a bunch of lettuce in an AeroPod machine, AeroGarden. It's a little tiny machine that, you know, controls the light and the watering and the temperature to keep everything, you know, perfect so that you can sprout seeds, grow little tiny plants, and then transplant them wherever you're going to transplant them, whether it's going to be in another kind of a seed tray or if you're going to actually put them in the ground. Of course, it's too early to put them in the ground. So, but this lettuce, it's so crazy. It grew so fast. And I've been talking to somebody else about microgreens, and that's kind of what this has turned into, is a little microgreen garden of lettuce. And not iceberg lettuce. It's all really good lettuces. So, but I wanted to talk a little bit about that. That AeroGarden, it's sort of expensive. And you don't have to do anything, you know, expensive like that. I mean, it's kind of overkill, but it is perfect for starting seeds. If you have that kind of money, it's a great little tool to use to start whatever plants you want to start. And if you have a greenhouse or somewhere to keep your plants, you can just start, you know, plant species after species until you have all your plants ready to go for, you know, May or June, April, whenever it is that you can put plants in the ground. But I was also thinking, I mean, if you have a little space inside, depending on what vegetable you want to start growing, you can actually do a pretty good job with just a seed tray. I mean, they sell seed trays that have like little 24 or, I don't know, 16, you can buy them all different sizes, but they're just little tiny trays where you can put a little bit of soil and a seed in and water it and put it under a light and let the, let nature take its course. And sometimes if you live in a much colder climate where, you know, the temperature is going to affect that, whether you do it inside or out, unless you keep your house relatively warm, you can buy like a reptile warmer. It's just a plastic mat that you can plug in, and it'll, you know, you can adjust the temperature on them so you can keep it real low, which you don't want to cook your plants, obviously, like you would cook your reptile. I'm kidding, but they like to be warm. And just keep that tray slightly warm and, you know, keep it watered, and those seeds will sprout just fine in there. And it might be a little slower, or probably not, probably about the same. And you can get, you know, 24 plants ready to go. And you don't have to do all the same. You could do like 6 tomatoes, 6 cucumbers, or 6 whatever. You could just divide them up and, you know, get the seedling started. But anyway, that's kind of what we're doing here on here at the homestead now, is just getting some of those plants going. But what was funny is, so those seedlings came up, and I was just oohing and aahing about how fast these seedlings came up. And then every day it was like, oh, they were getting so big, and they just kept getting bigger and bigger. And then, you know, I noticed a couple of them were, you know, short, like clipped off. And I said, hey, you know, what happened to this lettuce? And Crystal was like, I put it in my salad. So, you know, even thinking about that, like, just if you, and there's only like, I don't know, 12 or 16 of them in there, but just think about that. You could just like grow a little bit of lettuce, you know, and basically she'll probably just trim it off a little bit at a time, throw it in her salad, and, you know, just go from, you know, from pod to pod until after she's trimmed all, she can go back to the first one and start over. So I thought that was pretty funny. You know, it's kind of a good way to grow some fresh nutrition. You know, I'm always talking about sprouts. I know people think I'm crazy, but sprouts is a great source of nutrition. So quick and easy to grow, but it's kind of like that, but even better because you're actually getting like little microgreen. I don't even honestly know the exact definition of a microgreen. But I would think this would qualify. It's green and it's small. I'm not sure if that's the definition or not. But anyway, moving on, I wanted to say this. We're going to talk a little bit about foods that you can gather up, you know, if you don't have any food. I think I talked before about meats. I think some of that is just like going to be so obvious. Some people, if society collapses, then you have to fend for yourself, and there's no, you know, meat and vegetables at the grocery store, or, you know, they become very difficult to get a hold of, which, I mean, if you look at the world today, we were talking about it this morning, the whole adult family members anyway, we're talking about how much is going on and how much turmoil there is in the world right now. It's crazy. And with governments just locking up your bank account for whatever reason they feel is appropriate, you know, you could be caught in a situation. But I know some people are going to go, oh, well, there's plenty of deer around here. We're just going to shoot deer. Or we're going to get bear. Or we're going to get elk. Or we're going to get moose. Or we're going to get, you know, whatever. Okay, that sounds good at first. But that's what everybody else is thinking, right? Or the local cattle farm, or whatever. And I think those choices are going to disappear fast. So the options I'm going to give you are things that I don't think people will readily look for. And I think most of these critters would be fairly easy to get. And I'm actually going to talk about three animals and three plants today because I, you know, kind of like to keep it simple. And probably, you know, the animals we probably talked about before, I think all three of these are easily accessible animals that most people will not see as food unless you've eaten it before. Raccoon is kind of high on my list. Although, you know, at first you think there's probably a ton of raccoons, and there are, but you may have to, you're going to have to work for them a little bit. And the thing about food and nutrition and energy is that you don't want the energy expended to take and harvest and process your food to be more than what you get out of the food. You see what I'm saying? Like, you want to use so much energy getting the food that you actually lose overall calorie count because, you know, you've expended so much energy getting it. So coons, and I'm going to say for the three animals on my list today, number one, I would say you could kill these animals, honest to God, you can kill these animals with a stick, blunt force trauma to the back of the head, if you can get that close. My choice, saving on ammunition for things that are important, bullet type ammunition, I'm saying, would be a wrist rocket. Like a good quality wrist rocket, you can easily kill a coon. It might take you a couple shots. I mean, I would say practice with your wrist rocket till you know where you're aiming and you can hit an animal to dispatch it quickly. It's not going to be, you know, we're not talking about times of excess resources here. We're talking about subsistence hunting, subsistence gathering. So, yeah, I know that the PETA people out there will say, you know, how violent and horrible this is to kill animals with a slingshot. Trust me, when you're hungry, you're not going to be too worried about how you kill something to convert it to food. And that's just the facts, unless you want to starve to death. You can certainly do without some animal protein for a while. I think eventually you're going to pay the price if you don't have some animal protein. So anyway, keep that in mind. Wrist rocket. Coons you can take down with the wrist rocket. You're going to want to hit them in the head. Sorry, but that's going to be the best chance at killing them, is just to, you know, brain dead them as quickly as possible. And it's not a bad idea to have like some kind of billy club or stick that you can finish them off with if you have to. Definitely have a knife with you so you can get the hide and guts out of them, because meat will spoil, you know, quickly with the hide and guts in an animal. You want to get that, the hide and the guts out quickly, clean up the carcass so it's nice, clean, eating meat. Possum is another good one. I wanted to look into this before I came on the air, and I didn't, sorry, but possums eat a lot of ticks, which I kind of wonder if there's some kind of issue with possums and ticks. Now, I've actually had to dispatch possums before, which I wish I hadn't have. Once I found out that they eat so many ticks, I would have probably let them continue on their merry way. But they also, I think they were in the chicken coop is what I remember why we killed it. But anyway, I avoid killing possums now. But you can kill and eat possum. I would be careful with the whole tick situation. Like I said, I've harvested possum before and actually found ticks on them, which kind of made me wonder about the whole tick-eating thing. Why didn't they eat the ticks that were on them? And the last thing I'm going to talk about, and it's the same thing with the possum. Get the hide off. You know, get the guts out, clean it up. You're going to be surprised, you know, if you have seasoning, a little salt and pepper or something else, a little curry, which I know in times of famine, it's not going to be like we have all the fancy spices in the world, but I think a little salt and pepper or bouillon or something, you can trust me, meat is meat. You can make it taste good enough to eat it. If you're hungry enough, you're not going to care what it tastes like so much. You're going to eat it. The last thing I'll say, and also with a wrist rocket, same with the possum, same with the raccoon, is pigeons. Pigeons and doves, although I know doves are sweet, be tough to kill them. And probably quail, too, would go in this category. Although they're, you know, I like to think of things that are readily available. You know, I don't know about where you live, but if there's pigeons around, there's pigeons. It's like lots of pigeons. You don't have to worry about a shortage of pigeons. Possums, on the other hand, a little harder to come across. But I mean, hell, you know, sometimes you can get a roadkill possum if you get it soon enough and clean it up. Same with a coon, man. If it's, you know, if it looks like it was fresh, if you can see that there's some bright red blood there or whatever, you know, road harvesting, there's nothing wrong with it as long as it just hasn't, you know, started to spoil. And trust me, if you get an animal that's had its gut busted open, you know, on the inside, and you open that critter up, you're going to know you don't want to mess with that. If any of the contents of the gut has touched the meat, I don't take a chance. If I was desperate, I would take the hind quarters off, maybe the front quarters off. That means hip and leg, shoulder and leg, and leave the rest of the carcass intact and eat those parts because, you know, there's plenty of meat on those parts. With birds, it's going to be a little different because you're going to be lucky if you hit them in the head. But if you get really good with a wrist rocket, you're going to be able to hit them above the breast or like hit them in the back if they're not facing you. You'll kill them pretty quick. You'll definitely wound them to the point that they can't get away. And then you just wring their neck, really, is the quickest way to kill birds. If they're not dead, if they're flopping around on the ground, not dead, just grab them by the head and kind of twirl them around. It'll snap their neck and kill them. I know it sounds horrible. I'm sorry, PETA people. We're talking about survival here. And it sounds cruel, but like I say, yeah, you'll do what you have to do to survive, right? So sorry if it sounds ugly, but that's the, that's the truth. That's the way things happen in the world when you don't have your meat delivered to the grocery store. The next three things I want to talk about. One is crazy. If you've never had it, I would recommend trying this yourself. But dandelion leaves are a delicious green to eat. And really, in my opinion, with a little butter and salt, you know, two things absolutely probably not good for you. So many health professionals say and nutritionists will tell you. But really, it's delicious. You can eat it, you know, fresh in salad. You can eat it, you know, cooked or steamed a little bit or sautéed a little bit. It tastes like a green. If you've eaten greens in one way or another, either, you know, salad greens, a kale green, spinach, what's the other one? Swiss chard. Any of those that have that green flavor to them, dandelions, pretty similar to that. And how difficult is it to find dandelions? It is not difficult to find dandelions. I mean, just go looking. You actually, if you have a nice yard, you might even not have to go looking because you notice when they show up that there's dandelion there. And that has quite a bit of nutrition in it too. It's actually a very good vegetable to eat and, like I say, readily available. Two that are not so readily available depending on where you live. One is stinging nettles. Now, this one I'd heard about before. I've never actually tried it myself, but this year I'm definitely going to try it because I want to see. Well, one, I probably already have an idea what it tastes like because it's another green. But number two, I know they have those hairs that will make you itch, makes a lot of people itch when they come in contact with it. And they say if you pick the youngest leaves, that those needles won't affect you as much. And then, of course, if you cook it, it will, you know, take the sting away so you can eat it and it won't cause you any difficulty. But like I said, I haven't tried it myself, but I mean, here's another one that you wouldn't really have to go far to find some stinging nettles, I don't think. I mean, I know that in the late spring and summer here, we have plenty of them right here on the property. And there's plenty of woods nearby where I live, where I'm sure if I were to walk into the woods here, I wouldn't have to walk far to find some stinging nettles to harvest. And you know, the good thing is about like dandelions and nettles is they're pretty much a weed, and they grow like crazy everywhere. So it's not like there's going to be a shortage until people see you start eating them. then there may be a shortage. The last one I wanted to talk about was cattails. And what's interesting about the cattail, this is going to go into kind of that, why not eat humans? Beetle, I bet there's people who would. I'm sure there's people who would. I mean, look at the Andy survivors and the Donner Party and people who are stuck desperate with no meat. I mean, they may just, you may get that desperate. I'm not going to talk about that, though. Not yet. Cattails, actually, is going to go into this category of it may be a lot of energy expended for what you get back out of it. Although I hear that they're nutritious, here's what you have to do. It's like you have to pull the entire cattail out, which, you know, okay, so you're going to harvest this entire cattail and then peel off the leaves, outer leaves, right down to the root part of that cattail. And then you're going to just take from what I've heard, you're just going to take the white part of that stem, crunchy. It's really beautiful, white center piece of the stem. I've had people say it tastes like celery. I think it tastes just a tiny bit sweeter than that. But it does have a lot of nutrition. And you know what? Also, I mean, if it's near you, it would be, you know, worth gathering. But I wouldn't like decide, hey, you know what I need today is I need some cattail. I need to go find it, because you're going to expend a lot of energy. Unless it's growing really close to you, which I don't have any growing really close to me. I mean, probably within 3 to 5 miles there are some. But, you know, you're going to expend a lot of energy getting to it for what amount of calories you receive from it. So, I don't know. But it is kind of tasty and refreshing, especially if you're, let's say you're traveling along a water's edge somewhere and you know, you're running into these cattails all the time. Well, there you go. Hal says, tastes like chicken. I'm not sure about that. Everything tastes like chicken, right? If you can't describe the taste of something, it tastes like chicken. Let me see what else I wanted to chat about today. Well, we did ectodermal dysplasia. We did that. The wrist rocket thing, I'm telling you, people don't often think of some of these, some simpler weapons that actually can be very handy. I mean, you can keep a wrist rocket, you know, on you, or if you're heading out to harvest food, it's a pretty small, I mean, you don't even have to carry ammo. Think about it. There's probably rocks or, you know, pebbles, something that you can get your hands on to use as ammo when you're out and about. The thing is, like, a lot of people like to pick a very specific size of ammo that they regularly use, like ball bearings or BBs or pellets, and they shoot those enough that they know how they fly and they become very good at aiming with the particular ammo that they're used to carrying. But, you know, in desperate times, you could just pick up rocks along the way and use those whenever you get to where you're going, or whenever you get to, you know, near a critter that you have to dispatch, you might be able to just pick up some ammo. I would always probably make sure I had some ammo in my pocket. And yeah, I would probably, you know, practice with something that is, you know, readily available, but consistent. Because if you get used to shooting a certain weight of ammo from a wrist rocket, But that's not what you pick up. You pick up something heavier or something lighter. It's going to fly differently, and you may miss your target. The good news is, I mean, if it's critter you're trying to eat and it's one of, like a possum, they're not going to run so fast that they're going to outrun you to wherever or to escape unless there's a hidey hole really close by they can get into to get away from you. And coons are the same way. You pretty much catch them just crossing the road or going into the trees or catch them next to a water source, especially like in this area out in the country. So many people have their own reservoirs. And some, at one time, reservoirs were required on a farm of a certain size so that firefighters could use that water to put out fires. So there's so many reservoirs around. And when I used to trap, nuisance trap, people would call me because they had too many coons getting in their, you know, water source or tearing up the wall, especially, well, nutria. People also really hate nutria and muskrats and rats that burrow actually into the dirt and weaken the wall of these reservoirs. They would actually have me come out and trap coons, possums, nutria, muskrats, you know, whatever was causing damage to their reservoir walls. So, you know, there's places that you can go to increase the likelihood of having success on your, you know, food gathering. So my purpose today was to kind of cover some simple things that you will be able to do and some simple foods that you'll be able and maybe recognize. You know, now might be a good time to go try some cattail if you have some around. And I can't remember if you have to get them at a certain time of season. I don't think so, though, because it's that center stalk that's so important. But, you know, go try it. Go try some dandelion. Just pull some dandelion leaves off and go throw them in a salad or cook them with a little salt and butter and see what it tastes like. You know, it's better to find out if you can tolerate some of this stuff before, you know, hard times hit and you're desperate to do it by going out and practicing identifying some of these things and actually eating them, making sure that you don't have some guttural reaction to it, you know, diarrhea or nausea or vomiting or, you know, you get hives from touching it or whatever. And especially the stinging nettles, don't harvest with your bare hands. Use somebody else's bare hands. I'm kidding. Wear some gloves and try and avoid getting those nettles on you. It's just irritating as hell, and you could have a horrible reaction to it. Now, I didn't pay close attention to when I started the show, and I know Hal's coming up in an hour, so we have a little bit of time. So I might go just a couple minutes. Let me see if there's anything else I wanted to talk about. Oh, yeah, I know there was some things. Oh, one thing I did want to talk about is the convoys going on, man. I think I'm just so proud of the truckers for doing what they're doing in Canada. And I hope to God that they're treated well with respect. I hope to God Trudeau pays the price. That's something else I think it's time that we all do, is just start making a list of all the tyrants. And I mean, put names on the list of who the tyrants are, so if and when we ever get a chance to prosecute them, you know, we've made the case and have the evidence that these people were definitely involved in tyranny, you know, during this whole pandemic thing. Oh, I did want to mention, that was a crazy thing. Did you guys all see that guy who, I don't have it here, damn it, I'm sorry. So there was a guy involved with a modeling agency who worked with Jeffrey Epstein, and he was doing time in a prison in Paris, and he actually was found dead of apparent suicide by hanging. I thought that was pretty interesting. I know I'm bouncing all over the place now, so probably I ought to just call it quits for the day. That's probably not a bad idea. I'll put some music on. We'll go out of here. Thanks, you guys, for joining me. I hope you have a great week. I'll probably see you Wednesday if all goes well. Thank you. Let's get